I'm deeply grateful to the Rosh HaKollel, Rabbi Eli Schmelzer, for having invited me to come to speak to all of you. Miami is a great place to come to. The reason is because you meet people from all over the world that you knew, you know, you go back your whole life. You know, you see Chucky Abramchik, you know, from Chicago. You see the Burgers from Denver, the Guris from Santiago, the Mandels and the Shafrans from Queens. You know, it's like a United Nations here. And it's very, very special to see all of you. And I hope that tonight we'll be able to be inspired together. It's a very beautiful Zohar HaKadosh on a famous pasuk that we all know. Hinei matoiv umanoim sheves achim gam yochad. The simple meaning is how beautiful and how special it is and how sweet it is when brothers and sisters sit together. But the Zohar HaKadosh says that when brothers come together for a holy mission, and what could be holier than supporting a kollel to bring Torah, which continues from one generation to the other. When brothers come together, all kinds of people, Rabbonim are here tonight, Chevrei HaKollel are here tonight, Balabatim are here tonight, all men, women, all who come for this holy purpose of supporting the Kollel, Sheves Achim, when they brothers come together for this one reason, Gam Yochad, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, who's the Echad U'Miyuchad, he is also present at such a beautiful get-together. So it's our hope together that tonight, as we all come together, Rabbonim, Chevrei HaKollel, Rosh HaKollel, Yeshiva Light, Balabatim, men, women, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam will be with us and will be able to accomplish a tremendous amount tonight. It's a very interesting pasuk. The pasuk tells us that when Yaakov gave birth, Yaakov and Rachel gave birth to Yosef, Yaakov all of a sudden felt a tremendous confidence. The pasuk tells us, "Vayikasha yolda Rachel es Yosef." When Rachel gave birth to Yosef, "Vayomer Yaakov el Lavan." Yaakov says to Lavan, "Shalcheni. Now you can send me ve'elcha el mekayim la'arzi. Now I can go to my place. I can go back to Canaan. I can face the world." So the Shemesh Shmuel, the Sochachava Rebbe, asked the question: what was the big deal of having now Yosef, that now all of a sudden Yaakov feels confident he can face the world? After all, by this time he had already many, many children. He had Yehuda, all Jewish kings were going to come from Yehuda. He had Yisachar, all Talmid HaChachamim were going to come from Yisachar. He had Shimon, all the Rebbeim were going to come from Shimon. He had Levi, all Kohanim and Levim that work in the Beis HaMikdash, they came from Levi. So what was so special about having Yosef that now he says, "Shalcheni, now you can send me and I can face the world"? And the Shemesh Shmuel gives a tremendous teret and a great, great insight. And he says the answer is, it's in the name itself. Yosef means more. Never being satisfied with the status quo. And Yaakov felt once he has a child that will never be satisfied with his status quo, will always strive to want more and have more. As much Torah as he learned, he'll want to learn more. As much chesed as he did, he would like to do more. As close as he feels to Hashem, he wants to feel closer. As great as he has davened until now, he wants to improve in that. When I have a child like Yosef, who always is striving for more, such a child I can face the galus with. And the reason that I've chosen to start with this word from the Sochachava Rebbe, the Shemesh Shmuel, is because I believe that is the essence of Hanukkah. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, technically the letter of the law is that mitzvahs Hanukkah ner ish ubeisai. Mitzvahs Hanukkah, technically all you have to do is one father in the house lights one candle every night. That's technically on your yotze the mitzvah. We know Mahadrin, those that are more careful, so everybody in the family lights one, ner l'chol echad. But that's not what we do. What we do is what Beis Hillel says. The first night you light one, the second night you light two. Mikan ve'elach moisif v'hoylech. Moisif v'hoylech means more. You add more. In my humble opinion, that's the essence of what Hanukkah is all about. Hanukkah is not only latkes. Hanukkah is not only family get-togethers, and Hanukkah is certainly not only dreidel. Chanukah is a time to me that is as serious as Rosh Hashanah. Just as Rosh Hashanah, we all make commitments for the following year, how we're going to improve. Tonight, we have come together to make up in our minds, what are we going to improve in? We are all going to learn tonight how to be a Moisef for Hailech. That's how Yosef gave confidence to his father Yaakov, because he was never satisfied with the status quo. And if we have come together tonight on Chanukah, which is the essence of Moisef for Hailech, each in our minds and our own families has to think, what can we improve in? I know many of you here, wonderful, wonderful people. But we know as great or as good as any of us are, there's always room to steig hecher. There's always room to grow. And that's what we've come here tonight for. To learn in which way can we be a Moisef for Hailech. It's interesting. The Pasuk tells us about Klal Yisrael. Zayis ranon yefei pritoya kora Hashem shemech. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu Yud Aleph Tezayin tells us that Klal Yisrael is called a Zayis, an olive. Why is Klal Yisrael called an olive? And the Medrash Shmos Rabba Lamed Vav Aleph explains, you could take a test later, if you're not embarrassed. Take a cup of water, put some Pepsi in it, put some orange juice in it. If there's beer on the table, put some beer. Mix it all together. It'll be one big mishmash, one mixture. But you get some olive oil and you put it in, even if you put in the olive oil first, an amazing thing will happen. One, the olive oil will not mix with the other drinks, and second, it's going to rise to the top. That's what a yid is all about. We're in Golus. Whether you live in Miami, whether you live in Flatbush, even if you live in Eretz Yisrael, we're all in Golus. And we have to deal with the secular world. And we have to deal with them on a business level. We travel on their planes. We see their buses. We know their media. There's no way of getting around it. But yet, every yid has to make sure that we don't become a murka from them. We don't become absorbed by them. We don't look like them. We don't dress like them. We don't talk like them. We don't act like them. We don't tell the jokes they tell. Of course, we're part of the world. That's what life is all about. That's what the Golus is all about. But a yid has to be able to strive to the top. That's what a zayis is all about. Let me give you some examples of what does it mean when a yid strives to the top and rises to the top. This is one of my favorite stories. Some of you know I just came out with a book called In the Spirit of the Maggid. It's available in the back, by the way. But anyway, but this is one of my favorite stories in it. It's absolutely incredible. There's a yid in Eretz Yisrael. His name is Michal Goldfarb. Michal Goldfarb has not missed davening with a minyan in 30 years. Wherever he goes, he knows. If he's in Chicago, he knows when the Wi-Fi building, when they have mincha, and he knows Ma'ariv. Wherever he goes, he knows the places. To daven mincha, Ma'ariv, Shacharis, he'll never miss a minyan. About 2 years ago, he comes home 3 o'clock in the morning from a chasana, and he realizes that he didn't daven Ma'ariv yet. So if he didn't have a ma'ariv yet, he certainly didn't daven with a minyan. Where in the world is he going to get a minyan 3 o'clock in the morning? So if you're in Flatbush, you go to Avenue L, you go to Landau's. And if you're in Borough Park, you go to Shema Shabbos and catch up with all the Lakewood guys that are, you know, coming home from their late dates before they go back to Lakewood. And you could get ma'ariv, you know, even 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. If you're in Bnei Brak, you go to Itzkowitz, Rechov Rabbi Akiva, right? What are you going to do in Yerushalayim? So in Yerushalayim, there's a place called Zichron Moshe. Always minyanim, 24-7. So this guy comes 3:15 a.m. He comes to Zichron Moshe, looks around all the rooms, shah still, nobody's there. He sees one guy in the room. He goes over to him and says, excuse me, sir, did you done ma'ariv? He says, no. He says, you think we'll have a minyan? What, are you crazy? It's 3:15. In an hour and a half is Vesikin. We're not going to have a minyan. He said, what do you mean? But I have to have a minyan. I haven't missed a minyan in 30 years. Listen to what this guy thinks of. He calls an Israeli taxi company. He says, send me 8 cabs, only Israeli drivers. 3 o'clock in the morning. So the guy says to him, 8 cabs? Who's got 8 cabs 3 o'clock in the morning? How many you got? 5. 5. Calls another cab company. Send me 3 cabs, only Israeli drivers. 10 minutes later, 8 cabs come running up to Zichron Moshe. Everybody wants to know, where's the bar mitzvah? Where's the chasna? What are we doing here? So he says, Rabotai, everybody start your meters and come into the shul. They don't know what he's talking about. Everybody starts their meters, they come into the shul. He says, Rabotai, listen to me. I haven't missed a minyan in 30 years. I don't care what it costs me. I'm going to pay every single one of you on the meter. But we got to daven Ma'ariv together. So some of the guys were frum guys. They knew what Ma'ariv was. Some of the secular Israelis, they don't know what Ma'ariv is. They can read Hebrew. 25 minutes it took to finish Ma'ariv. At the end, he goes over to the first frum guy who came. He says, sir, how much do I owe you? Check your meter. He says, listen, sir, I've been davening all my life. Never did I daven in such a holy minyan that one guy is ready to pay eight guys on the meter. I wouldn't take a penny from you. So he goes over to a secular guy. He says, how much do I owe you? He says, sir, I haven't been in a synagogue in 10 years. Tonight is the first time I prayed in 10 years. I shouldn't take money from you. I should pay you for giving me this experience. And not one of the eight guys took a penny from him. Why? Because this guy, they saw this guy rises to the top. He has Mesiras Nefesh for a mitzvah. I guarantee you that if it was me there looking for a minion, I never would have thought of that idea. Never. I believe that the reason this person thought of the idea is because Hashem gave him that chesed to think of that idea because he's Mesiras Nefesh for the mitzvah. Let me tell you another person who rose to the top. And what's incredible, the book is only out 3 weeks, and already I've gotten so many calls about this story. Of course, when I wrote it, I knew it's a beautiful story, but did I think that this would be the story that everybody's going to be calling and talking about? It's incredible. In Mir, in Eretz Yisrael, in the big yeshiva, many of you know the yeshiva, a fellow got married recently, and he spoke at his Sheva Brachas. And he said, Rabbi, I want to tell you the turning point in my life. And he tells like this. He said, I remember I was in the fifth grade. And there was a little boy in our class, Naftali, who brought in a watch. Now, it was a very expensive watch, and his mother had told him not to bring it because he would surely lose it or it would get broken. He didn't listen. Fine, he's showing the watch to everyone. Everybody's handling it and looking at it. Finally, it comes time for recess. The kid knew if he takes the watch outside while he's playing basketball and it breaks, his mother will kill him. So he left it on his desk. He leaves it on the desk. Everybody goes out to recess. He comes back after recess. The watch is gone. The kid goes over to the Rebbe. Rebbe, please, you got to help me. My mother's going to shoot me. I got to have that watch. Now, normally, the Rebbe would go outside with the boys for recess. That particular day, he was standing outside the door. He didn't go outside with them. He was outside the classroom. So there was no custodian that could have come in that took the watch. And there was no boy from another class that could have come in to take the watch. So somebody in this class had taken it. The Rebbe waits for everybody to sit down. And he says, Rabbi Isai, listen, we all saw that Naftali had a beautiful watch. And he left it on his desk before we went to recess. Now, it could very well be that somebody picked it up and by mistake, they put it into their pocket. So if anybody did it by mistake, please bring it up front to the desk and we'll give it back to Naftali. And nobody moved. So the Rebbe said, listen, Rabbi Isai, I'm going to have to do something. I don't want to do it. I'm going to have to line all you guys up against the blackboard, all 20 of you, and I'm going to have to check your pockets. Now, today he would get arrested if he did that. But, you know, this was a couple years ago. So he says, listen, so I understand that somebody could have picked up the watch and, you know, just looked at it, and by mistake, they normally put things in their pocket they didn't mean to. So if you did it by mistake, again, he's giving them a pischaim pes, so they should be moida, and they wouldn't get in trouble, and nobody moved. Rebbe said, okay, I'm so sorry, boys, everybody line up. So they all lined up and their hands are against the board. And he said, nobody should turn around. And the Rebbe starts going through the pockets. And the Chassan says, by the third boy, the Rebbe had the watch. Because I was the third boy. He said, but the Rebbe didn't stop there. The Rebbe went and he checked the pockets of all other 17 boys. And after he finished checking the 20th boy, he said, everybody should sit down. I have the watch. And the Chassan says, I was trembling because I knew he knew that I took it. And he had every right in the world to be angry at me. And as I was walking to my seat, I was looking at him to see if he's looking at me. He didn't even look at me, so nobody should even have a habamina. Nobody should even think that it was me. And when I sat down and I realized that the Rebbe didn't embarrass me and he didn't make me feel as low as he could have made me feel, and he would have been right because he asked us twice to present the watch to him, I realized that he was saving my dignity in front of all my friends, and I swore to myself that day that one day I would be like him. That's rising to the top. In life, many, many times we have a right to criticize others. A husband can criticize a wife. A wife can criticize a husband. Co-workers, people in a shul, people in business. There are times when people make mistakes. But there's a way to criticize. There's a way to save the dignity of another person. There's a way to get the message across. This Rebbe not only rose to the top, but his unbelievable midos brought out something so special in this child. This child devoted his life to be able to be just like that Rebbe. So I want to tell you one more story. What does it mean to rise to the top? And then we'll go on to another section. You know, there's a famous organization called Shuvu. Shuvu is an organization that Rapam started, and he started it to help Russian children in Eretz Yisrael. And when Rapam passed away, many of the Rosh Yeshivas throughout America picked up the slack. And they all got involved to help the schools, the Shuvu schools in Eretz Yisrael. So it happened 2 years ago that Shuvu took a whole bunch of Rosh Yeshivas. They didn't want to make a big tumult. They just wanted to show them what they're accomplishing. They were going to take them from place to place. No big hoopla, no big advertisements. And they took them from place to place to show them what they were accomplishing. Friday morning, they took all the Rosh Yeshivas to the Kaisel. Take them to the Kaisel. Friday mornings, a lot of American guys hanging out at the Kaisel because many yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael don't have Seder on Friday. So all these American guys, they see all these American Rosh Yeshivas. Wow, they couldn't get over it. They go over. Shalom Aleichem. Some of them have learned in their yeshivas. Oh, a big circle forms around them. There was a Baal Tshuva, a brand new Baal Tshuva. The guy's still wet behind the ears. He's davening by the Kaisel. He doesn't know from anything. He's standing there. He's davening with sincerity. He turns around. He sees, whoa, what's going on here? He goes over to somebody. He says, what's going on? So somebody says to him, oh, the Chashuv of Rosh Yeshivas came from New York and from America. And so they're here for the Shuvu organization. And he sees this guy's about Shuvu. He says, would you like me to take you over to the Chashuv of Rosh Yeshiva to get a bracha? He said, yeah, sure, but I don't know them. He says, come here, let me take you over. Takes him over to Rabbi Aaron Schechter. So those of you who know, Rabbi Aaron Schechter looks like a malach alikim, a long white beard, never a vaval big day, looks like a malach. And Rabbi Aaron Schechter is very perceptive. He sees in a second this guy's brand new. So he gives him a warm Shalom Aleichem, and he asks him how he became frum, and he gives him a bracha, and this kid is flying. The whole afternoon, wherever he goes, he's going around telling people, you know what happened to me today? I was at the Kaisel. I got a bracha from Rabbi Aaron Schechter. You know who Rabbi Aaron Schechter is? Rosh Yeshiva Chaim Olin. And the kid is gloating, and he's so happy. Wherever he goes, that's what he's saying. Friday night, he's invited to a frum family after davening. He comes home. And he's, by this family. He says that the meal. He says, you know what happened to me today? I was at the Kaisel. I got a bracha from Rabbi Aaron Schechter. You know what Rabbi Aaron Schechter is? So somebody says to him, did you get a bracha from Shmuel Kamenetsky? He said, who's he? What do you mean you don't know who Shmuel Kamenetsky? Rashiva, Rabbi Yankov's son, Rashiva Philadelphia. Listen, I don't know anybody. You know, they took me over to Rabbi Aaron Schechter. That's all I know. The next day, by the Suda, lunch, after Musaf, he gets invited again. He's sitting at the table. He says, oh, you know what happened to me today? Yesterday, I was at the Kaisel. I got a bracha from Rabbi Aaron Schechter. So everybody's impressed, and they say, yeah, did you get a bracha from Shmuel Kamenetsky? I said, it's funny you should ask me that, because they asked me that last night. You know, I don't know who he is. So all of a sudden, somebody had a hamodiah at the table, and there was a picture of all the Rosh Yeshivas. So he takes a look. He says, oh, you see the guy in the middle? That's Rabbi Aaron Schechter. That's the one I got the bracha from. So they say, sitting next to him, that's from Shmuel Kamenetsky. He said, that's the guy who took me over. Could you believe that? That's what I said. And you know, I didn't want to believe it, so I met Rav Shmuel at the Aguda convention. I said, tell me the truth. Did you take over that Baal Tshuva to Rabbi Arshef? He says, yeah. That's humility. That's rising to the top. He's going to take him over to the Chashuv of Rosh Yeshiva. That's midas. That's greatness. And that's what we have to strive for. But you know, there's another element in Hanukkah that we have to be aware of. It's a very interesting gzeira. Not many people know this. That the Medrash tells us that it was a strange thing that the Yevonim, the Syrian Greeks, wanted the Jews to do. And what they wanted was they told them, Kisvu al Keren Hashor, write on the horn of the ox, She'ein lechem chelek b'lekei Yisrael, that you have no connection to Hashem. What in the world does that mean? Why would they do that? They made every Jew write on the horn of an ox, you have no shaychus to Hashem. So the Midrashim, the commentaries, they struggle to find out what was the sense in that? What was the meaning of that? And some say, well, because there were many farmers and everybody had an ox. And it would be as if, Chas v'Shalom, today somebody would make all Jews put on a bumper sticker, no Jew has a connection to God. Chas v'Shalom. So that was probably what that was. That's what some of Farshim say. A lot of people had oxen, so you had to say we got no chelik. So I remember I was once in Gateshead, and I met Rav Avram Gurwitz, Rav Shiva in Gateshead, and he told me that he has a friend, Rav Bendis. And Rav Bendis was once learning Mishnayis Kalim. Kalim is very difficult. It talks about the Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash, which we don't know what they looked like exactly. So he went to the British Museum to see what the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash was. They had some relics there. And he takes a look. He sees a baby bottle in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. You know what the baby bottle in the time of the Beis HaMikdash was? The Keren Hashur, like a little shofar. And the Gemara Shabbos says that's what they used for a baby bottle. They would hole out, they would carve out that little shofar that was on the horn, which was the horn of the ox, and they used it as a baby bottle. They put in milk or water, and the baby would suck on it. Oh, that's what it was, he says. They wanted that the little children, by osmosis, when they're drinking their baby bottles, that they should see Ein Lanu Chelek V'Lakei Yisrael. We have no connection to Hashem. So in other words, they wanted to poison the chinuch of Klal Yisrael, even by osmosis. And it occurred to me, if that's the case, maybe the words chinuch and Chanukah are connected. Chanukah Sabayis means to inaugurate. They inaugurated the relighting of the menorah. But when you have a Chanukah Sabayis, there's great joy and there's great excitement. And maybe that's what chinuch is all about. Chinuch is always supposed to be with new joy, new excitement, every day something new, every day something special, every day something exciting. All the Rebbes and all the Moras that we loved over the years, they were those who understood that's what chinuch is all about. They always made it exciting. They always made it new. They always made it special. And if that's the case, perhaps tonight, on a night of Chanukah, is a time to begin talking a little bit about how we can be moisiv v'hoylech in the chinuch of our children and grandchildren. So I'll tell you something very interesting. A number of years ago, I went to Rav Michal Feinstein, the son-in-law of Rav Elbel Soloveitchik. So I don't have to tell you. Rav Elbel Soloveitchik was the Gan HaGaonim, the Godel Ador. You can imagine who he picked as a son-in-law. So I was sitting and we were talking. I was there with my son and my daughter-in-law. Happened to be Genendel Gibber, who grew up here in Miami. So Genendel, for some reason, had a shaychus to Rebbetzin Lifsha Feinstein. Somehow she knew her. So when the Rebbetzin walked in, they were very, very close to each other. They had known each other from before. So I said to the Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Lifsha Feinstein, who's the daughter of Rav Elbel Soloveitchik, I said, you know, I have the opportunity many times to speak about chinuch. Tell me just one thing from your great father, Rav Elbel Soloveitchik, about chinuch. She thinks for a moment, and the first words out of her mouth were so shocking to me, I couldn't believe it. She said in Yiddish, "In Brisk, hob mir gehat schrecklicher Menschen." I used to think everybody in Brisk was a tzaddik. Don't you think everybody in Radin or in Mir and Tells, everybody was a tzaddik? But I guess it was a city like any other city. And she told us a story, an incredible story. She said, you know what happened one night in Brisk? There was a political Zionist meeting. And she said there was the Jabotinsky people and the Ben-Gurion people. Now, I don't know the difference between Jabotinsky and Ben-Gurion, what their policies were, but whatever it was, the people were very angry at each other, and they were debating publicly the policies of both of these Zionists. And then what happened was, there were two brothers who got up to debate, and they debated each other with such ferocity that they literally, in front of everyone, got into a fistfight. And of course, you see two brothers get into a fistfight. What's going on here? The meeting broke up. There was pandemonium, yelling and screaming. The whole thing fell apart. Right from that meeting, somebody came to Rav Elbel Soloveitchik. And she said, we were all sitting around, all the kinderlach were sitting around the table, and they come to our father, Rav Elbel. And somebody tells the whole story and says, Rav Elbel, nothing like that would ever happen in your family. No two brothers would behave in such a way, such a chilul Hashem, in front of everyone. What did you do to have such wonderful children? And look what happens by the others, the chilul Hashem that they caused. So Rebbetzin Lifshitz said to me that for whatever reason, my father didn't want to answer them. He didn't want to answer that person. He just shrugged his shoulders. But after that person left, our father turned to all of the children and listened to what he said. I want to tell it to you in Yiddish exactly how he said it, and then I'll translate. He said, what they don't know is vifol tzrerin, vifol tilim, vifol tanesim, vifol shlofetik enechtechav avegigev mtzav and azalach akinda. What they don't know is how many tears I shed, and how much tilim I said, and how many days I fasted, and how many sleepless nights I gave up to have such kids. There are no guarantees today. Every single one of us knows in the holiest and the most special families you have kids at risk. They're on Ocean Parkway in Brooklyn, and they're in England, and Golders Green, and they're in Israel, all over the world. No guarantees. And I'll show you there's no guarantees. How in the world did Avraham Avinu have a Yishmael? You ever think of that? How in the world did Yitzchak have an Esav? Or David, three sons that were Rishayim? And on the other hand, how did Laban have two nice girls like Rachel and Leah? How'd that happen? How did Terach have a nice boy like Avraham Avinu? How did that happen? Terach says there's no guarantee. Every person needs mazel. The first lesson in Chinuch is you gotta daven every single day that your children go b'derech ha-yosha. That's the first thing. That's what Amichel is teaching us. Tererin, Tilim, Tanesim. It doesn't happen by itself. And you want to know where to daven? I'll tell you where to daven. In Shema Kaleinu, if you haven't davened Ma'ariv tonight or tomorrow morning, before Kiyat HaShemeya, take a look at the Art Scroll Siddur, where they add extra tefillahs. All the Chasver Rabbonim here will be able to tell you. You can even talk in English then. Before Kiyat HaShemeya, daven, beg and plead that your kids shouldn't be influenced by the bad kids in the class, or the bad kids down the block, or the bad kids in camp, or the bad kids in Israel when you send them to Israel in seminary and yeshiva. Who knows what they're doing at night? You have to daven every single day. You know how many times I've davened? And atachoyne liyodam das, Hashem, please, please give me the daya, the wisdom to say to my children and grandchildren the things that will influence them, l'toyv. That's the first thing. You know what the second thing that we have to learn tonight? You have to have a happy home. You know, it's a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Tainus Chav Beis that Eliyahu Navi was once walking with Rav Broika, and he said, you see those two guys? They got a straight ticket to the Olam HaEmes. So Rav Broika was wondering, who are these guys? A straight ticket? Listen to what they said. So he goes over to them after Eliyahu Navi left. He said, I hear you guys are special. What are you so special? Listen to what they said. Amrele, they said, Inchi Bedichi Anan, we are happy people. Mibatchinon Atzivi. We make those that are happy, those that are depressed, we make them happy. Imagine, if you have the capacity to make someone who's brokenhearted happy, you got a straight ticket to the Olam HaEmes. But the Mamloye teaches us a Gevaldik lesson. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara doesn't just tell us that they make other people happy. The Gemara tells us, what did they say? Inchi bedichi anan. We are happy people. Then, mibatchina natsivi, then we can make others that are depressed, we make them happy. And listen what the Ma'amloyes writes, if you want to look it up in Dvarim Kof Ches Mem Zayin. Shem Odom Roitzel Lesameach HaChayrim. You want to make your spouse happy. You want to make your kids happy. You want to make your co-workers happy. Tzorechu Atzmoy Lesameach. You got to be a happy person. Shem Eim Atzmoy Atzavim. If you're a nagging, depressed person, always looking for the negative, Atfilo Hoya Roitzel Lesameach HaChayrim Lo Yechayrim. Even if you want to make somebody happy, you're not going to be able to. You want your kids to be happy? You've got to have a happy home. Without a happy home, the kids are going to run someplace else. Nobody wants to be in a depressed place. Believe me, I understand as well as anybody else that divorce has to happen sometimes. And there are wonderful single mothers and wonderful single fathers. No question about it. But I am telling you, 90% of those kids from broken homes are kabonas. Half of the kids on the street that are at risk come from broken homes. Not all of them. There's a lot of reasons. The most important thing that we can do is build and rebuild our marriages. I want to quote from a secular source. I hope you don't mind. What children learn from their parents' marriage. A woman, Judith Siegel, wrote this. Children are deeply affected by the ways in which parents demonstrate respect for each other. When parents praise or compliment each other, they send a message of value that is fully absorbed by the child. When parents demean each other, they create discomfort and conflict in the child. disrespect between parents also creates an imprint of marriage as an unsafe place to be. The first thing you got to do is you got to daven. The second thing is your home has to be a happy home. How are you going to do it? I'll give you one lesson. A lot of lessons. One lesson. You know what? I once heard a great expression. I learned this from a dear friend of mine who's a marriage counselor. That's not the reason he's my friend, but we happen to be good friends. All the Chofetz Chaim people know him here, Dr. Abba Goldman. Listen to what he said. He said, you know, the Pasuk tells us that Hashem said to Chaim, what are you so upset that I didn't accept your carbon? I'll let him say to say, so you improve, I'll forgive you. Vim lo say to, but if you don't improve, oh, la pesach chatas reveitz, sin rests at the door. So Dr. Goldman always tells people, and every one of us should do the same. When a husband comes home from the day, no matter how crazy it was, no matter what the boss tells him, no matter what he heard, first thing you should say, something positive. Start La Pesach at the door. Chatas Revitz, you can start at the pressing mood. No, say, I heard a great shiur today. I made a great business deal today. I heard something great happened in Israel. And the same thing, even if when the husband comes home after a whole day, the wife should say something positive. Even if she got a call, you know, from Rabbi Abramchik that the kid's going to be suspended for 2 years. You know, that's not how you start the conversation. You don't start, you say something positive to your husband. You know, I baked your favorite chocolate cake today. The principal called, the kids did something special. My mother called, she decided not to come. Something positive. First thing is davening. Second thing is having a happy home. You know what the third thing is? The third thing, I remember I once went to Rav Volba, I went with my children. I said to Rav Volba, tell me, what should I tell parents about chinuch? And he said, tell them all they got to give two things to their children, time and love. So my son, who was in the koilo, was worried he might have to give too much time. So he said to Rav Volba, how much time do we have to give our children? And the answer was classic. As much as they need. You cannot and you may not go to every single wedding that you're invited. It's impossible. Every night there's something. A chasana, a bar mitzvah, a bas mitzvah, an op sharing. Thank goodness you can't do a bris at night. But there's always something. A parlor meeting. Every night there's something. You can't go out every night. And I got a secret for you. You'll be amazed. If you don't show up at that wedding, they'll get married anyway. You'd be surprised. So you got to pick and choose. You can't be out every night. People ask me, you know, the last year you've been all over the world. You've been to Santiago, you've been to Edmonton, you've been to Australia. How do you do that? You know what the answer is? Oh, my kids are married. You got to be crazy to do this if your kids are home. They need you. They need your attention. You don't give them time, they're going to get validated by somebody else. You know what I do with each of my kids? Every one of you should do this. Shifra Sharfman was here. She saw it. Every week, without question, every child gets 20 minutes or to a half hour undivided attention. Whatever you want to do, me and you. You want to go play ball? We'll play ball. You want to learn? Fine. You want to go bowling? Fine. You want to do exercise? Fine. Whatever you want to do, just me and you. No cell phones, no calls, nothing. Nobody can interrupt. Any man here who does not know what Masechta every one of his boys is learning has got homework to do. And every woman who doesn't know your daughter's three best friends and your daughter's favorite color, you got homework to do. I want to ask you a question. Don't tell me the answer. Think to yourself, when was the last time you had a real good conversation with your child? Think about it. A real good conversation. Not what you get in your test, what you get wrong, what gematria did the teacher say. It's not a conversation. A real good conversation. To find out what makes them tick. That's how you reach your children. When the children know that you care. And you can't know, they cannot know that you care unless you spend time with them. And I want to tell you, today we live in a different generation. Today, grandparents can serve that role very well. Today, grandparents are younger than they ever were. I come to a bris sometimes. I say, Mazel Tov, you the mother? She says, no, I'm the grandmother. She says, Rabbi, thanks for the compliment. I mean, you know, who looks like a bubby today? My bubby looks like a bubby, right? But today, they're going to dancing lessons and they're playing tennis. You know, bubby, it's amazing. You know how many times my wife has gone ice skating with my granddaughter? My bubby didn't even know what an ice skate was. So I want to tell you a great story that happened between me and my grandson. I'm a big believer in sports. Big believer. I believe every kid should play sports because it gives them a great sense of self-esteem. Boys, girls, everyone. Listen, if they've got two left hands, you know, it's a problem. But basically, if you can manage it, play with them, let them excel in something, then eventually they'll excel in the things that are important. So I said to my 7-year-old grandson a couple years ago, Avram, I said, Avram, listen, when you're ready for your first baseball glove, you call me. I'll buy it for you. He says, okay, Zadie, I'll call you. 2 days later, he calls me. Zadie, I'm ready. Fine. So in New York, we have a huge sports place. It's called Sports Authority. They have many, many places. Now, the Sports Authority in Queens, where I happen to take Avram, without exaggeration, must be at least 10 times as big as this hall. 10 times. There must be, without exaggeration, 3,000 basketballs, 2,000 soccer balls, and 10,000 gloves. Because you got gloves for 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds. You got pitcher's gloves, first baseman's mitts, catcher's gloves, all kinds. How in the world are you going to choose a glove for a kid like that, right? So we walk up and down the aisles. Now, I know that people on this side are not going to be able to relate to this. Most of the people on this side will be able to relate. When I had my first baseball glove, it was a Wilson. The Wilson glove smelled, that leather was heaven itself. Between pitches, I used to just smell that glove. Chaim Siegel, remember in Camp Pagoda? Just smell that glove. It was unbelievable. So I'm walking up and down the aisles. All of a sudden, I can't believe, Wilson, they're still making gloves. I pick up the glove. It's got the same smell. I say, Avram, smell this glove. This is the one for you. He says, Zadie, what are you talking about? I said, smell it. You'll see. Zadie, I know what you're talking about. So we throw a ball back and forth. He catches it, and I buy him the ball. I buy him the glove. It's terrific. 3 weeks later, one night, my wife comes home with the glove. I said, Mim, well, what's this? She said, nah, Avram wants you to have the glove. He knows you like to smell it. First thing is daven. Second thing is create a happy home. The third thing is spend quality time. Let's talk about one more thing, and then we'll move on. One more thing, and this I heard from Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. An incredible insight that all of us have said so many times, but perhaps we don't realize it. What do we say in benching? Compassionate one, Hashem, bless my father, my teacher. My mother, my teacher. What, every father is a Rebbe? Every mother is a Mora? The answer is you are. The way you answer the phone, and the way you talk about another shidduch, and what you look at night, and how you spend your time on vacation, the kids know and they pick it up. So you're a Rebbe whether you know it or not. You're a Mora whether you know it or not. Many times you call a home and a teenager answers the phone, you could swear it's the mother's who's picking up the phone or the father, because they say the same thing. It's automatic. They learn the same things. In my house, automatically. I don't know why this is. I know why this is. Every doorknob has rubber bands. You know why? Because my mother-in-law in Denver, Colorado, in every doorknob had rubber bands. That became the halakha of Moshe Mesinai. Because my mother-in-law did it, so my wife has to do it. By us, all the newspapers are on top of the refrigerator. Why on top of the refrigerator? Because that's how my mother-in-law did it in Denver, Colorado. So all the little things, even the little mishigasin, that parents do, their kids pick it up. The fourth and final lesson is you got to be a role model. And don't think that anything that you do, the kids don't pick up. They pick it up. So one of my favorite places to be in this universe is in Antwerp. In Antwerp, you have such heilige Yidden. There's a fellow by the name of Pinchas Kornfeld. The most charismatic Yid you could imagine. A Gera Chosid involved with the government, involved with Tzorchei Tzibur. Unbelievable. He tells me that they have a little chederol. They have boys and girls in the same class, but it's pre-1A. So the teacher wanted to teach the kids about Shabbos. So the teacher says, okay, Chaimel, you bring in the wine, and Sarla, you bring in the fish. This one will bring in the challah, the tablecloth. Wednesday morning, everything is on the table with the white tablecloth. It's beautiful. And she's going to show them how to run the Shabbos table. So she says, Chaimel, du vizayn de tati. Chaim, you'll be the father. Oh, he sits up front. He's so happy. She says to him, okay, Chaimel, fangon, beginning, begin. The kid plops back on his chair and he says, oh, you bil gata shverevoch. Oh, did I have a difficult week. You can't even make that up. That's what the kid says every single Friday night. That's how he thinks Shabbos starts.
So you got to daven. You got to have a happy home. You got to spend time. You got to be a role model. You know, Rav Aaron Kotler asked a very interesting question. He says, you know, when you make the bracha al hanisim on Purim, it's al hanisim, you know why? For the miracles, because Haman wanted to kill us. And he couldn't kill us. And so therefore, Klal Yisrael existed. He says, by Pesach, the second bracha, Asher Go'olonu, we make the bracha, it's also like an al hanisim type of bracha. We thank Hashem that you took us out of Mitzrayim. Pari didn't want to let us go out. That was a miracle. So the existence of Klal Yisrael resulted because of that miracle. But he says, by Hanukkah, we make a bracha al hanisim. What, on the oil? And what if they didn't find the oil? 8 days later, they would have had new oil. That doesn't have anything to do with the existence of Klal Yisrael. As a matter of fact, we all know that Bnei Yeshua's Kasha, Tumahutah B'tzibur, them as they could have used oil that was Tomei, but they didn't want it. They wanted pure oil. Fine. But what has it got to do with the Nitzchias of Klal Yisrael? Zokt Rav Aaron, a great insight. He said the light of Hanukkah that we celebrate, the Ness of Hanukkah, that Shemen is not only the oil that we light at the Menorah. Ki ner mitzvah v'toyra or. Ner mitzvah v'toyra or, the real light in Klal Yisrael is the Torah. And he says, if you look at the Al Hanisim, you know what the Bnei Yisoschar, and interesting Chabad as well, they don't say the words V'al HaMelchomos. Is that correct, Rabbi Weberman? Right? Of course. I wouldn't have asked them. But it's true. They don't say V'al HaMelchomos. You know why? Because we're not talking about the war. We're talking about the light. The light is the light of Torah. The Rabin B'yad Miyatim was Matisyo Kohen Gadol and his family who observed the Torah. But not everybody did, but the Ness was Tameyim B'yad Tehoirim Zaydim B'yad Eskei Teresecha. That's why in Hussein Al Hanisim, they wanted Lashkicham Teresecha. They wanted to make sure that we forgot Torah. Oh, but these people, these minimal amount of people, they were able to do a yeoman's job. They were able to convince all of Klal Yisrael to go back to learning Torah and to doing mitzvahs. That's what the Ness is all about. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Chanan asked a very interesting question. Rabbi Chanan says that his Rebbe, the Chofetz Chaim, once asked, if the Malach wanted to fight with one of the Avos, why did he wait to fight with Yaakov? Could have fought with Avram. Could have fought with Yitzchak. Why did he wait to fight with Yaakov? So again, I want to tell you how the Chofetz Chaim said it in Yiddish, and then I'll translate. The Chofetz Chaim said, the Yetzahara, the Artemit, Ayid ken fastin, Ayid ken davnin, agan to talk, I've been it learning. In other words, the Yetzirah doesn't care. Be a Baal Chesed. That's great. Oh, that's wonderful. Be like Avraham Avinu. That's okay. Be like Yitzchok. Daven a whole day. Oh, as long as you're not like Yaakov. As long as you're not learning Torah. That's why the Malach fought with Yaakov. He was trying to take away the ammunition of Klal Yisrael. The reason the Hamshocha of Doiris continues, the reason that Klal Yisrael continues from one generation to the other, is because you have Rabbi Schmelzer's. Because you have Kerelim in all the great cities. All the great cities in Europe that existed until Nebuchadnezzar the war was only those cities that had yeshivas. Those yeshivas, those places that had kollelim. And that's how it is in America today. Those places that last with Yiddishkeit is only when there's a kollel there. So let me tell you something amazing. Amazing thing. At the end of the war, and I have talk of this story in the book, it's an incredible story. Rav Aaron Paperman, his family told me, he was a Telzer Talmud. Rav Aaron Paperman was a Rav in Springfield, New Jersey. And he got a call that he should become a chaplain in the army to help the Jews that just came out of the concentration camp. And he went to Rav Elie Meir Bloch, and the family told me, he asked Rav Elie Meir, should I go and leave my position as a rabbi and go and become a chaplain in the army to help the people in the DP camps? And Rav Elie Meir said to him, believe me, Rav Aaron, if I was young enough, I'd quit being a Rosh Hashiva and I'd go to help those Jews. We got to do everything to help those Jews. I'm just not young enough. I don't have the strength anymore. So he went. And he opened up an office in one of the DP camps in Italy. And he had this makeshift office and people would line up and he would help some people. He gave medication. Some people he gave some clothes. Some people he gave regards from other family members. And this Yidl comes into him one day and he says, chaplain, Rabbi Paperman says, what can I do for you, sir? He says, you got a Baba Kama? He says, a what? He says, chaplain, you never heard of a Baba Kama? Of course, how could this guy know that a Byron Paperman learned in Tells? He said, of course I know what a Baba Kama is. I'm here to give medicine. I'm here to give chizuk. I'm here to give encouragement to find out about relatives, to give you clothes or money if you need.
He says, listen, chaplain, 4 years ago, I was in my home in the kitchen in Hungary. I was in the middle of learning Baba Kama. The Nazis, Yimach Shemam, they came and they took me. I haven't opened up a Gemara in 4 years. You get me a Gemara Baba Kama, and I'll nurse myself back to health. And this short little man, Mr. Seeger, made such an impression on Rabbi Aaron Paperman. He closed his office that day, and he went. There was a library that had been ransacked but not burned, and he got this man a Baba Kama. And that person came, and he got the Baba Kama, and he nursed himself back to health. Eventually, he moved to Brooklyn and built a whole family, children and grandchildren. Incredible. And you know something? How did that happen? You know why that happens? Teiras Hashem Tamima Meshivas Nefesh. The Torah of Hashem is so pure and so perfect, it restores the soul. We're living in difficult times, as the chairman mentioned. I don't have to tell you that over $1 trillion was lost in the last few weeks by people all over the world, long before Madoff got involved. It's difficult times. How do we find tranquility? You find it in the Kailo. You come and you learn Bava Kama, and you come and you learn Shulchan Aruch, and you learn Mishneh Berurah, you learn Chumash, you learn Tanakh, whatever you want to learn in the Kailo. That's the island of tranquility. And I'll tell you an amazing thing. I have a dear friend, his name is Benny Lachman. Benny made finished a Masechta, he made a Siyam, and Rav Freifeld came to the Siyam. And Rav Freifeld said a remarkable thing. Goes back many years ago, because you know Rav Freifeld passed away a number of years ago. He said, Benny, I know you and your friend just finished Masechta Kedushin. And I know that you may feel terrible because in a few weeks you may forget what you learned, but always remember this. Even if Torah goes in one ear and goes out the other ear, at least it went through your head. That's a great thought. If Torah goes in one ear and goes out the other ear, it washed your brain. Of course, if you chazer and you study and review, you're going to remember it. But even if you come to the kollel, and even if you allow your husbands to learn, and sometimes you ask your husband a question, and he doesn't know the answer. So you think, so what's he going to the kollel for? Right? Every wife complains. How could you not know halacha? Isn't that what you're learning in the kollel? It's not everything. There's a certain tranquility. There's a certain yashrus. There's a certain mindset. When a person learns Torah, that he begins to look at the world in a different world. Rab Gifta told me that when people used to ask him, Bachram would ask him, that they had to go to college. The parents were going to force them to go to college. So Rav Gifta told me that boys would sometimes ask him, what should I do, Rebbe? Should I go right after high school, I'll go to college, and then after college, then I'll sit and learn? Or should I sit and learn first, and then I'll go to college? And Rav Gifta said, every one of them, he told them they should sit and learn first. Because then when they go to college, they're going to look at the professor through Rav Zeir's eyes. They're going to look at the professor through Abaya's eyes. Learning in a kollel is not only what they remember. Of course we want them to remember and to study it and to review it. Learning in the kollel brings the tranquility to a mishpacha, because that's bringing the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it's all about. That's what the Doiros are all about. So I just want to end with this remarkable, remarkable thing. The Torah tells us that when Yaakov Avinu came to see Yosef, that's the one we started with. Yosef is the one that brought that tranquility to Yaakov, because he felt that he would always build higher. He was away from his dear son 22 years. Now he's coming back to see his son. What does he do? Pasuk tells us that he sent Yehuda. Ves Yehuda shalach lafonov el Yosef. He sends him lahoyrois lafonov goishna. He sends him to Goshen. Why? To build a yeshiva. Because only when you have a yeshiva, only when you have a kailo, that's when the community is going to grow and prosper and blossom. The Bnei Yisoscha says the most remarkable thing. The word Goshna, Gimel, Nun, Shin, and He are the letters in the dreidel. The first time I saw this Bnei Yisoscha, I thought he was kidding. The Bnei Yisoscha is writing about a dreidel? Isn't a dreidel a kid's game? He says the dreidel is great significance. The letters on the dreidel are the history of the Golas of Klal Yisrael. Listen to this. He says, what was the first Golas? The first Golas in Klal Yisrael was Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar. They wanted to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. What does the Torah tell us about a person in the Beis HaMikdash? The Nefesh Ki Sakriv. A soul wants to come close. Korban doesn't mean a sacrifice. Korban means coming close. How do you come close? The nefesh, that soul wants to come close and come to the Beis HaMikdash. So when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Nun was destroyed. That's the nefesh. That's the nun on the dreidel, the golus hanefesh. Haman wanted to kill the bodies of Klal Yisrael. Lahashmidu laharigas kol hayudim. He didn't care if we were going to convert. Anybody who had a grandmother that was Jewish, he was going to kill him. Guf, that's the gimel. That's the golus haguf. Nun is the nefesh. Gimel is the guf during the time of Haman. What happened by the Misyavnim, by the Syrian Greeks? They wanted to change our mindset. They wanted to change our culture. They wanted to show us a different type of sophistication. So they were trying to poison the seichel, that's the shin, the seichel of Klal Yisrael. Not that Torah was the priority, but culture was the priority. So the nun is nefesh, and the gimel is guf, and the shin is seichel. And the Bnei Yisoscha says today, Rachman al-Aslan, you look around the whole world, ha-koil, hey, ha-koil, you got every type of golus. Hamas is trying to kill us, no matter what. America is trying to poison our minds over 60% into marriage. Believe me, when I see tonight, Rabbi Guri, you guys don't even know what kind of power you have in here in Miami when you have this great tzaddik and his wife coming here. What they did in Santiago is unbelievable. People who knew nothing, they went and they brought people back to Frumkeit. 200 families. I saw it with my own eyes. You come to the school, it's unbelievable. Today, people, if you don't have people like that, so what's going to happen? America, intermarriage, poisoning the seichel of Klal Yisrael. Hakoil, they don't let us come to the Beis Hamikdash, they don't let us come to Yerushalayim. And as the Bnei Yisoscha says, no dreidel can stand forever. It spins and spins and spins, and then eventually it falls. And what remains? Klal Yisrael. Because the whole world spins around the Jews. And then he ends with something magnificent. Gimel, Shin, Nun, Hey, Goishna. The letters on the dreidel is equal 358. Mashiach is equal 358. When that golus falls, the nun, gimel, and the hey, and the shin, what's going to remain? The 358 will remain. Not the 358 of golus, but the 358 of Mashiach. We've come here tonight as brothers and sisters. Let's take this great event that the Koilo has sponsored. Of course, let's help the Koilo. The Koilo next year and the year after should not have 8. They should have 16 and 32 all the way. Just keep on growing because we'll all gain from it. We'll all make this the Mokim Torah where everybody will be able to bring our children and grandchildren to learn. If there's anything that deserves to be supported first, that's what it is. Because that's the future of Klal Yisrael. Yaakov understood that. That's why he built the yeshiva. That's why he sent Yehuda to Goishna to build that yeshiva. Let's remember tonight, Moisif Ahaylech. Hanukkah is a serious time. It's not only fun and games. Let's each and every one of us tonight make a Kabbalah. I've made mine. I'm not going to tell you. You don't have to tell me yours. But every one of us should make a Kabbalah from this Heilig of Hanukkah together. We're going to make Moisif Ahaylech. We're going to try to do something more than what we've done till now. Whether it's Ben Odom L'Chaveiroi, Ben Odom L'Mokayim, that's up to you. Everybody does something. But it has to be Moisif Ahaylech. And let's remember, just like the Keren Ashur, they tried to poison our chinuch. That's what Hanukkah is all about. Let's be excited with the chinuch of our children. Let's be there for them. Spend time for them. Make sure that we have a happy home for them. And let's serve as an example. And let's daven for them. And if we daven for them, and Hashem answers our prayers, that we have a dor yeshorim or mevorach, that we have wonderful children and grandchildren, hopefully Hashem will answer our tefillahs. We'll bring Mashiach in our time. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening.